listeners, welcome to another episode of Economically Yours. We've been focusing too much, you know, on like fintech and equities and portfolios in general. So this time we thought let's zoom out a bit and let's look at the Indian startup ecosystem as a whole. So the Indian startup ecosystem, we all know, has had a whirlwind decade so far, even in the last decade and the ongoing decade as well. It's second to none in the world, and it continues to employ millions of people in various sectors, right? However, there are startups that have not been able to cross even the early stage. So it's pertinent that we reflect upon certain tactics which are used by founders and highlight the importance of financial modeling in today's age. Because what we understand by our interactions is that financial modeling is one of the key parameters that's required once you're building a company, right? So without much further ado, let me introduce you to Mr. Sriram Chidambaram, who brings over 22 years of rich experience in financial management. Apart from being a leader and an avid sports person, he is currently the founder of Spiceroot Finance, which allows him to interact with early stage and growth stage startups. Not to forget, he's also into SMEs. He also helps SMEs, where he helps them unlock value through strategic financial management. So I know it's been kind of a very monotonous introduction, so I would like to stop there and I would, you know, ask you, Sriram, to introduce what SRF does and how is it, you know, accelerating the startup ecosystem today.
Okay, thanks, Darshan and Charmi, for having me here. It's like it's been a pleasure to interact and talk about what we do, explain about how we do things with startup ecosystem to a larger crowd through this podcast, right? So thanks for that. Well, let me explain how it all started. I've been kind of working in two large multinationals for more than 15 years, working with both manufacturing and services sector. And I really know like how kind of both operations and sales functions and how finance adds value at various points or at various points of growth, because I've seen these organizations where I work growing from zero to 2000 over like 3-4 years. So while I was looking for a third stint of my career, I thought like why don't we kind of look at adding value for multiple companies rather than one company in another large multinational. And that's how the whole thought happened of starting Spiceroot Finance. Basically to help companies run through their financial journey. I would say when I say financial journey, the growth journey to make money, because many companies kind of go through this death curve, valley of death curve, and kind of can't come out of it if they don't really manage the finance better. So the whole idea is if you can really explain this, right? So we in India, or at least let me explain all of these things in an Indian context. So in India, you on one side, you have many financial advisory firms or accounting firms, I would rather say, focusing on accounting, compliance, audit, taxation. And on the other side, you have large consulting firms focusing on strategic finance, but they're not reachable to all the startups or MSMEs. So there's a huge gap in between. And that's where I think we come in, and we're trying to do this at scale. Right. The thought here is how to and majority of the startups or MSMEs doesn't really understand the nuances of how a finance can help them grow. They have been growing. That's there. I mean, but how can you really kind of grow using strategic finance is where we come in, Charlie.
Right. Sure. So when you mention about this huge gap, you know, that's there between this ecosystem, within this ecosystem, I would also like to highlight the fact that this gap sometimes is also there because of funding today, right? So the perceived value, as we say today, is different for an investor and for a founder. Like if I'm owning a company, my valuation for my company would be different from that of an investor who's wanting to invest in my company. Like for example, Cred today grows on funds. Like it has a lot of funding and the company is burning cash like anything and is growing today. Whereas a company like, say, Zerodha, right? It's completely bootstrapped, but it's growing exponentially. So how is this gap between requirement of funding, you know, solved? Is there an implied ground rule that states that, you know, who can raise funds, who should raise funds, and what kind of founders are today looking to raise funds? And how should an investor look at this? So how would you bridge this gap?
Okay, let me take the second part of the question, right? So, I mean, both Kunal and Nitin, right? Both of them are visionaries, right? So I would say, and both are growing on a different perspective or on a different scale. What I would say is it all depends upon the vision of how a business owner looks at how the company grows from an idea phase to a scale phase, right? I think I would say any startup founder has to be a visionary in looking at the business. We keep interacting with multiple startups over a period of time, interacting with more than 500 startups ever since we started. What I always tell the guys is that you need to envision your business with a longer view, right? Many startups like have a 6 month, 1 year view of their business, but I always say that have a larger vision, larger goal at where you kind of see next 5, 6, 7 years at a 30,000 feet level, right? Not necessarily at a tree level, but at a forest level. Then kind of get nearer, net nearer, because unless you don't have a larger view, you can't think, right? So what I want to say is definitely, I mean, funding is only a byproduct of your vision. So what you need to really understand is how your business is growing from an idea to a scale stage, right? So certain businesses can grow only at scale. For example, if you, all of us know how Amazon has been burning money for decades, but now it's like one of the most valued company in the world, right? So there is no, I don't think Tred is correct or Zerodha is correct. Each of them are correct in their own ways, but the product or a service gap you're trying to solve, it really fits in, right? What Kunal is trying to do is identify a niche or a kind of a blue ocean where nobody is attempting in India, and kind of he tried to link multiple buyers and sellers and kind of create a different kind of an ecosystem for people to make money. While what Nitin has done is a completely different thing, right? How a stock broker or how people buy stocks or even trade stocks in India. So I think both of them are completely different, and I don't really say that, okay, burning cash is the only thing. It really depends upon how do you visualize your whole business, right? In the next part, after the vision of, after the strategic or high level vision, I think it boils down to how do you really navigate all these phases and really convert your vision into a business model, right? I think if you don't have a business model, specifically a financial model of how are your revenue streams going to come in and what is your expense stream, right? Because the whole funding is a byproduct of the timing difference between the inflow of funds and outflow of funds. And inflow of funds will happen only once you start generating revenue or start having revenue streams. So if you look at it, I mean, there has been a lot of brouhaha around Tred spending so much of money in marketing. But yeah, that's how their business model is. Maybe they have envisioned like saying that, okay, next first 2 years, we are not going to make any money, but there's a hockey stick coming out there from the third year onwards. And both the investor and the founder has been very clear on what they want, right? So I'm saying a financial plan to understand the gap between revenue stream and the expense stream is where you really understand what your funding is. It's not necessarily that each and every business is going to need money to start with. Like 90% of the companies can definitely be self-sustainable until they reach scale. But what startups don't really understand, or many of the entrepreneurs don't really understand, is I can't move without funding, right? But when I interact with them, they don't really know how much of funds do they require. So that's where, I mean, all our interactions, while we really wanted to tell the importance of financial modeling, is that many of the entrepreneurs, 90% of my interactions, they don't have a formal financial model in place. They go by gut, they go with certain assumptions, and they arrive at that, okay, for one unit, again, that unit economics understanding itself is kind of at times is flawed, right? So we always kind of help them, first of all, understand what is the money you require, right? So to answer your question, so it really depends upon what kind of business you're trying to solve, what kind of problem you're trying to solve, what kind of business you are in, and whether it's a blue ocean or you're already having some people in the kind of market you're already working on, right? And each of them, and both Zerodha and Cred are doing completely different in their own markets.
So you rightly put that it depends on the visionaries like Kunal and Nitin who are running two individual startups. And it depends on, they have a deep dive into the future, but there are also certain companies that have, you know, gone into multiple rounds of funding like Zomato, and it's the growth is not a given. Like once you have raised the funds, it's not necessarily that the startup will grow. So is there something, an anchor that will pull the numbers up, or is there a certain ground rule that you have once you have raised the funds for that growth to flow?
So let me start with saying that, right, let's talk about only a funded company here, right? Because let's not talk about non-funded companies or non-VC funded companies, right? Now, when you raise funds from investors, you're going to present certain milestones, or you're going to present certain plan. So your financial plan or the plan what you're presenting to the investors are depending upon key product or a service or a growth milestones, right? So what I would really say that anchor can always be the milestones what you have in mind, and how do you really play around with the milestones, because the plans are made in a vacuum, but as you start executing, right, it start interacting with the environment and many variables change, right? And how do you really achieve these milestones still with the initial assumptions is the key for success of any startup, right? Because let's take an example. I want to achieve a product market fit in the first 6 months and do a repeatable sales kind of a model for the next 12 months and after that scale, right? So what we are saying is by 18 months, I'm going to scale the business is what you're going to see. You're going to get funding and you start working towards product market fit, and you see that the 6 months has extended into 12 months. Now, mind you, there are certain costs irrespective of your growth phase or irrespective of your milestones you're going to incur. So an entrepreneur should really understand how do they really manage the available funds and reduce the burn to achieve the defined milestones, right? If you're stuck with fooling around investors or not giving the right information and kind of progressing much slower than your defined milestones, then you're doomed, right? So the point what I'm trying to say here is define your milestones very clearly, and you should understand what it takes to reach your milestones. And this is where the financial discipline comes in place, right? I don't want to really preach finance, because I'm more of a business partnering guy, but you need to really understand when to spend more, when to spend less, and still reach those milestones, right? So the anchor, to answer your question, the anchor for a growth and coming out of the debt curve after getting funded is to really respect the milestones, manage the current cash by running different scenarios of like, okay, if this is going to happen, this is how I'm going to run. So that whole discipline of running the business, viewing the business from a financial perspective, because end of the day, many of the startups don't move from one stage to another stage because of lack of funds. It's not lack of funding, but it's lack of discipline on running the companies.
Right. So going back to the Cred example that we discussed earlier, right? So I understand that many startups fail because they burn too much money. Cred is an exception. Like Cred successfully burned millions of, you know, funding, and it earned just pennies in the initial years. But the idea is eventually paid off or is paying off currently. So for early stage startups, what is the mantra or the guiding force that they need to navigate through growth, irrespective of the funding they receive or the funding they do not receive?
So let me kind of borrow certain points from the earlier answer, right? Any growth, the growth of any startup can be broadly defined into three phases, right? Build the product, develop the product, and scale, sell the product, right? So when I say develop the, when, I mean, you can call it as a product or a service, but I'm saying successfully managing these three phases is very important for a company to grow further, right? And when we are talking about how you move from one phase to another phase is how you really work in each of these phases, right? So first of all, let's put it as how you define your unit economics of your product or a service, right? So unit economics, it's not fixed. Again, you derive or you start calculating certain way when you really conceptualize at an initial stage, right? But I see many companies don't even look at what was their initial assumptions, and they keep giving discounts, they keep incurring more costs, and don't necessarily understand what is happening to the initial assumptions, and they worry, okay, why are we not making money, right? So unit economics should be also reviewed at various stages. Now I see many entrepreneurs don't even understand what is unit economics for the respective company. It's not necessarily one unit or a one product or a service they are selling. So for certain companies, running an operations in a city can be unit economics. So for certain companies, running an operations in a country can be unit economics. For certain startups, running different products can be unit economics, right? So as a successful entrepreneur, you need to really understand what is your unit economics and how it develops at various stages of scale, right? Because and again, this is where we as finance mentors kind of help them refine, help the startups refine how do they really need to treat the costs at various levels of scale, right? You don't need to necessarily capture the entire cost of the organization at the initial stages of your business. A CEO salary cannot be part of a product, because there are certain conservative entrepreneurs which have come across, and I keep telling them you can't recover entire cost in your product, and you can't necessarily sell your product or service, right? So I would say understanding the unit economics at various stages will help you to treat the cost in a different way, right? Even though finance is a very objective way of looking at things, but understanding your cost structure and how it changes over a period of time will help you to take a very strong decision of, I don't need to consider these costs while going to the new market, right? So I'm saying that's the way to for a startup to grow successfully over a period of time, right? To know, understand their cost structure, how these costs play around a period, way play at a period of time, over a period of time, and how to take advantage of the market opportunity as well, right? So if there are not too many competitors, you should actually have the premium initially, while there is an opportunity, not necessarily to undersell yourself. And again, it comes with like my interactions with a lot of early stage startups, that there is no clear defined unit economics, right? Others are doing it, we will also start doing it, and maybe undersell and gain the market while there is no costing or a unit economics in place. So I think and many investors can overlook these things, but end of the day, the startup or the entrepreneur is the one who struggles once the startup fails, right? So I would say unit economics at various stages plays an important role to move from one stage to another, and also restrict and have a defined strategy to move from like a product market fit to a repeatable sale, and a repeatable sale to a growing your business, right? Because the way organization should work and the way decisions have to be taken in each of these stages are completely different.
So just to reiterate, like mentioning about unit economics, so that I think can, so remember the hockey stick explanation that you gave for CRED, extending that analogy over here, the unit economics will come into picture from each stage, right? Or would it just come into picture after the PMF has been achieved? I'm just trying to clarify it for my better understanding.
Right. So the PMF as a product market fit journey is an evolution of the product or a service, right? So before you start defining the service, I'm sure you know that this is how my product is going to cost or a service is going to cost. But from that point, by the time you cross the PMF phase and to move to a repeatable sales stage, there must be a lot of changes in the environment, right? Because you create or a service, you define and visualize something, but you interact. For certain companies, the PMF stage itself is quite long. It might be even 2 years. For a deep tech company, PMF is so long, right? So, and by the time the inflation changes, by the time the market changes, the raw material cost changes. So you need to really look at various phases itself. So I would rather say you need to look at it. I mean, a good period can be once in a quarter to look at your unit economics of what you have defined and what is the reality now. So not necessarily it stays constant through one single phase.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very subjective, because what if out of the blue somewhere like a startup like ChatGPT comes along? So your unit economics will change drastically within.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah.
You cannot go with the gut. You cannot go with a thing that, okay, no, my product is going to work. Always revalidate, always kind of compare what is happening, right? So other competitive products or other competitive services, or even change in your cost structure can completely make things haywire. And you are blind of this and waste money and start progressing without looking at these things that are going to doom your company, right? So that's the reason I'm saying you need to kind of keep looking at it, keep looking at these things on a regular basis.
So I've not looked into the numbers for ChatGPT, but if you could throw some light on how strategic finance can help over here, because you spoke about the startup has to have a detailed cost structure analysis. And I think financial modeling will play a pivotal role in building a growth ecosystem. So how is that bridging the gap?
Okay, so if I can really explain or articulate how strategic finance helps in growing a startup, right? Because while you move from one phase to another phase, because the success of a startup definitely is how you move from one stage to another stage without burning much cash and still move to a scale up stage, right? If you really look at it, take example of Nykaa. Even at an IPO, the founder had 50 plus shareholding. I keep telling many startups whom I interact that, okay, just visualize how others have done, right? And that's the success of how you successfully raise funds over a period of time and manage your milestones. Now, strategic finance, while the word might be very very high level, but what we are trying to say is it's an iterative process, right? It's not a reporting or an accounting tool, but while the company moves across various phases of growth, they need to take certain key decisions, right? It can be a pricing decision, it can be a discount decision, it can be a working capital decision, right? Many companies would have taken one wrong step on a working capital and can get the complete cash stuck in inventory, right? So again, that's the strategic finance role, right? Because if you don't really look at your cash flow forecast and how your decision impacts your cash, gone, right? So all these are aspects of strategic finance only, right? So reviewing your finances every month, forecasting your progress, whether it is a financial forecast or a cash flow forecast, understanding impact of each of your investment decisions, right? Because I see many entrepreneurs other way. I come across very conservative entrepreneurs who doesn't want to take decision because they don't know how it impacts the P&L or how it impacts the cash what they have, right? I tell them that, boss, why don't you kind of prepare a forecast and incorporate this cost and look at how it impacts you, right? So all these are strategic aspects of finance. It's not operational, right? These are strategic aspects to understand, if I take this decision, what is going to happen to my company, right? So all these are various aspects which kind of helps you build confidence of growing a startup or growing your company from zero to kind of an IPO, right? Coming to an example, what you have given, I mean, any new trends are going to completely impact. So the environment is so dynamic that each change for me, if I really take an example of how I transitioned from a manufacturing to a service organization, manufacturing organizations have a working capital cycles of almost 180 days. And then in a service organization, it's just a day, right? And I would say for startups, it's like zero, right? I mean, it can be even seconds. In seconds, the whole the competitive landscape might change. So the term or the whole concept of strategic finance will help them to sail through this whole kind of a tsunami of new technology, which can take them out of the game, right? So that's what I would really kind of explain to survive through your startup journey.
So, like you just mentioned about the competitive landscape being vast in the startup ecosystem, right? So, having said that, being a startup in this competitive environment, how do you actually not burn money? Like, is there an accounting? Like, I understand that the accounting concept is, like, you know, definitely missing in some startups, but how do you navigate this issue? And while we're talking about this, I would also like you to bring in how SRF is helping startups, you know, navigate this or kind of attack this issue persistently.
Okay, so as I've explained earlier, burning money is not the only thing. At the same time, you might need to burn the money for certain aspects of your growth. Let me explain how we do things at SRF, right? So we are, what we are trying to do is, we are trying to bring the strategic finance into each of the startups we work with, right? Currently we work with more than 40 startups with 20 different industries, and we are trying to do these things at scale, right? And how do we do this? So we define various aspects of finance anytime we take the call. We take the startups into our kind of an environment, right? So what we basically do is ensure that each and every startup have a clear financial model as soon as they come to us, right? And we clearly define and ensure that they also understand it's not that we're running it, right? Even though we are saying that we run their CFO office, it doesn't mean if you don't really interact with entrepreneurs and make them empowered with various decision making. So the I think the holy grail of sailing through these is ensure that you understand the company's numbers, ensure that you review your performance on a monthly basis, ensure that you review your business model on a periodic basis, right? And ensure that you drive the growth with very clear metric-driven dashboards within your organization. Ensure that you create performance metrics which helps you to monitor your growth phase, right? So these are various tools which we use as CFOs for large organizations. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it work at scale, because each startup might not require each of these, right? So certain early stage startup might require help only in kind of refining the business model while from a period of 0 to 6 months. But 6 to 12 months or 6 to 18 months, they might need help in taking the right decisions on pricing, taking the right decisions on growth, taking the right decisions on contracts. Again, having a finance go-to person will kind of help you to kind of bounce upon. Most of the times, entrepreneurs might take the right decision, but to ensure that and get a confirmation that whatever they're taking is right will help them to grow more confidently, right? And scale brings its own complications. I see many companies not doing well at scale because the processes are kind of not there. I mean, in the sense that there might be lack of control, there might be lack of data integrity. Again, having a CFO office yourself kind of helps you bring in the expertise of having proper controls in the company, ensure that you grow properly and you grow at scale with profits as planned, right? So what I'm trying to mention here is that, yes, you should burn, you might need to burn as per your business model, but have the right discipline of monitoring your business progress against plan, right? It's not necessarily only financial, right? Again, at the starting of the conversation, I was mentioning about the milestones. So it's very important for you to really look at these milestones on a monthly basis and understand where you are against that. And you know that, okay, your vision still remains clear, and you know that, okay, I'm going to reach the milestone of product market fit to a repeatable sales within the planned funds what I have, right? So that's the kind of a clarity it brings. Otherwise, many of the entrepreneurs will keep struggling or worrying about, okay, what's going to happen next? But I think having a clear financial discipline helps them and kind of removes the mist of their vision, right? So that's the kind of value we bring to the startups.
I think to summarize, having a financial mentor is, you know, very important, if I have to put it very crudely, and that is what SRF does.
Absolutely, absolutely. So second term or an experienced professional getting into startup ecosystem really understands it, and they kind of comes to us. But what we try to do is and explain the whole concepts or the literacies of financial strategic finance aspects to multiple younger entrepreneurs. So I think we spend a lot of time working with incubators and accelerators, explaining or doing learning labs about what strategic finance and how it helps you. And I see these guys' eyes glowing, right? Saying that, okay, this is what it is, and they get excited. But what I can say is, yes, this whole concept will help them to focus on what their business model is and then march towards it.
So having successfully raised funds for a startup, reaching every milestone that the investor has put up, such and such X amount in this many years or this many sales in this number of years. So what would be the perfect ideal exit strategy for a startup which has reached all the milestones, or a startup which has failed and looking to exit the market?
So let me put it this way, right? Many entrepreneurs doesn't really visualize what investor wants, right? End of the day, investor requires or expects certain X of investment, certain X of return, right? So let's say he's putting $1 million. After 5-7 years, on an average, they expect at least 5 to 7X as a return, right? And again, it goes, they kind of spread the risk, and they expect that only 10% of the startups or 10% of their investments succeed. Right. So exit strategy, any entrepreneur while pitching to the investors, they need to really understand that the enterprise or the investor will look for a return. Right. It's just not for raising funds, but you should really explain how, while I'm not really answering your question yet, but what I'm trying to say is entrepreneurs miss the concept of visualizing what is the return for an investor by investing in startup. Is what I think people should start really looking at it. And that can only come once they visualize how his company grows at various milestones and how an investor can exit, right? So yes, a commonly put exit strategy is an IPO, right? You see so many startups moving to successful IPOs. Of course, market dynamics are there, and then you see the fluctuations, and you see many media articles around the reduction of value of Zomato, etc. But yes, IPO has been the most sought after exit strategy for any investor, whether it is a VC or a PE. And if you really look at it, right, once the company is listed, it's completely based on the performance of the company, right? It's not necessarily, or the perceived value will go, and the actual value of what the financial results bring is what will be the value once you get listed, right? So I would rather, I at times I keep telling the guys that, okay, as long as you're private, it's a different ball game. But once you become a publicly listed company, your perceived value will go for a toss. You need to really show value on your balance sheet, right? That's one of the main exit strategy. But other exit strategies like acquisition, right? It can be an M&A, which can be more of a strategic M&A, or it can be an acqui-hire kind of a concept, wherein you see that, okay, you have certain large, let's say, Credit acquiring multiple companies recently, which they feel as a subset, or which can be a good part of their overall product or a service strategy, right? So, of course, these two are the main exit strategies what investors will think of, whether it's an IPO or an acquisition. But from an entrepreneur perspective, the vision of making it big is the main important thing to really think about how the investment made by any investor will grow value to him. I don't think startups should think that, okay, after 3 years, I'll get acquired by this target company, because the environment is so dynamic, because after 1 year of the enterprise, the target acquirer, what the entrepreneur is thinking of, might not be in the business at all. So he shouldn't be kind of really targeting certain companies that they will acquire and going to start this business, right? So I think having a clear vision of 5-6 years, having a big 30,000 feet view of their own business, and seeing at how the value at various steps of their product or a service growth is important for entrepreneurs to really understand and explain about exit strategy to the investors, right? Because if you don't really understand how the value of your company grows at various stages, whether it is at volume growth or is it at a services, increase of services led growth. If you don't really visualize, you'll not be able to really explain the exit strategy to the investors.
Yeah, rightly pointed out, we know that an offer for sale through an IPO is the most commonly used exit strategy for investors from a startup today. But my point is that 90% of startups, or maybe up more than 90% of startups, fail today, right? They don't reach the stage for an IPO that investors get a chance to exit for, through offer for sale. So I understand that there's a death valley, as you talked about, that in a startup ecosystem. So how do most startups survive? How should most startups survive this death valley? And what are the stages, it has to go through before actually this exit strategy comes into play for any startup?
Let me kind of step back a little bit, right? So death valley of a company is nothing but until you have a steady stream of revenue, you need to depend on the external capital, right? Now, conceptually, death valleys can only be the initial phase where you don't necessarily get a revenue or get inflow of funds, and you kind of put your own bootstrap funding from yourself or friends and families. But I think with the whole dynamics of the startup landscape or competitive landscape or an innovation landscape, if I may call it, the death valley extends until you necessarily go positive on your P&L, right? So the death valley extends because you see large companies raising millions of dollars going out of business. That's because the death valley is still, you definitely break even at an EBITDA level. So which means that you need to really understand how do you really move across various phases through innovative means of funding your company, right? Whether it is from, it can be from a very good customer at an initial stage who can give you much favorable terms of running your business, or it can be through bank funding, or it can be through revenue-based financing. It's not equity all the time, right? But passing through the phases in a intelligent way, while a deep tech firm will have a 2-year product market fit, right? Like a D2C business, it's like a 1-week product market fit, right? You'd see a requirement and you kind of start delivering is a product market fit for a D2C company. So defining what are your milestones and how you require money and how you manage money is how you come out of your death valley, right? So of course, if you really analyze how startups have failed, topmost reason is lack of funds, but it's not really lack of available funds. There is so much of dry powder out there, right? Where investors are sitting with funds to invest, but it's about how well the company manages through these phases without dying, right? That's the whole successful, that's the whole extended death valley, if I may call it, wherein how do you really move from a stage zero to a self-sustainable business model where you don't really depend upon external equity funding is the real death valley these days, right? And you need to ensure that you have proper financial and operational discipline of running your business day in, day out, and have periodical reviews, have proper systems in place, and then come out of the death valley. So I might sound very traditional, I might sound very CFO-ish, but that's what it is, right? And that's what we preach for startups, and that's what I think we are trying to do at scale.
Great. I think it's been a well-rounded conversation. We started with, how we explained the different stages of a startup ecosystem. We started with pre-PMF, PMF growth, etc. We discussed about how a startup can, transition through these stages based on financial modeling and strategic financing. And we also discussed about the exit that investors can get once they have invested into the startup, and if they get the chance to exit, that is. And that's to summarize the podcast so far. So I guess, having said that, it's time for our signature rapid fire round to end this podcast.
Oh yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. So let's start. I mean, we'll throw one word each. So I'll start with my first word, startups in India.
Fantastic.
Innovation.
A lot of investment.
Strategic financing.
Financial modeling.
Cash burn.
Business model.
Growth scale.
With profit.
ROI.
It is in the eyes of the beholder. In here, it's like it's in the eyes of the investor.
Virtual CFO.
It's like finance office running a CFO office. It's not necessarily a CFO on your side.
Death Valley.
Don't never run out of cash.
The last one from my side, Spice Root Finance.
Startups, buddy to kind of ensuring that they grow successfully.
And the last one from my side is Sriram.
Well, I would say a lot of positivity and profits.
That's a nice one.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And we wish all the luck for Spice Root Finance. May you keep bridging the gap between the investor and the founders in for the years to come.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much for having me here. Lovely talking to you guys.
Thanks, Sriram.
Thank you. Thank you so much.